let's discuss a few short things. First of all, this week is Shabbos HaGadol. Why is this Shabbos called Gadol? Why is it called great? We learned not that long ago when the kids are Shulchan Aruch. He brings down probably the most popular interpretation why it's Shabbos HaGadol. It's all in the mind. It seems like it's a very long Shabbos because we go to shul and the rabbi darshens. The rabbi speaks halacha, he speaks agada, drush, pilpul, and since we have it was customary to come to shul and to listen to a rabbi's drasha, people perceive the Shabbos as being a very long, difficult Shabbos. It's like a fast day. Until you get through the day, it's a difficult day. We learn this parish in the kids, so this is the only thing the kids of Shulchan Aruch explain why it's called Shabbos HaGadol. We have to remember that years ago, see, we think today that we have no attention span, that our minds are shot. I hear it all the time. But the truth is, the years in Europe, why do we say our mind in Europe? They never had drashas. The only time the Rabbanim darshan 100 years ago was twice a year, Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Shuva. That's it. Two drashos a year. The rabbi would speak typically for over an hour. That's also true, but only once a year. Once a year, they darshan pilpul. Wasn't Jewish? Wasn't homiletics? And the rabbi's job during the rest of the year was mainly to paskin shilas, was not necessarily to give speeches. So that is why it was something that was unusual for a person in a community to have to listen to a drasha for such a long time. This is the day before days of the internet, before you can go to yutorah.org and listen to over 100,000 shiurim. This is a different generation. Only how often did you hear a speech? No recordings, only live twice a year. So a person, it was a very disturbing experience to listen to a drasha, and that's why the kids Shulchan Aruch says it was called Shabbos HaGadol. Different way we live in a whole different world today. Okay, but let's go to something a little more different. Why is it called Shabbos HaGadol? So I saw a very nice idea from the Svas Emes. It's a very deep idea. Why do we observe Shabbos? We observe Shabbos in the Aseres HaDibros. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Well, there's a difference between the way it's presented in Parashas Yisro, in the Dibros Rishonos, and in the Dibros Acharonos, in Parashas Veschanan. In the Dibros Rishonos, we observe Shabbos, Zochores Yom HaShabbos, Kisheishes Yom, Osu Hashem Es Hashem V'Yesaris, V'Yom HaShvish, Shabbos V'Nefash. We observe Shabbos of Maise Bereishis. Hashem created this physical, mundane world. In the Luchos Shnios, we observe Shabbos because of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Remember that Hashem took you out of Egypt, and you were slaves, and you were redeemed, and therefore we observe the Shabbos as a reminder that we are Hashem's servants. And the fact that what does Shabbos have to lead to Mitzrayim? So you don't really need anything very deep. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. It's a day that we recognize that He is our God. It's a day of rest, just to focus on the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and recognition that He has acquired us as a nation through Yitzias Mitzrayim. Others want to say that in Egypt they observe Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu, he lobbied Paro that it would be beneficial for the Jewish people and that they should have a day off from work. Paro agreed. There was rights for slaves, and there was one day off, and Moshe Rabbeinu used that one day to be mechazek klal yishol with emuna, to speak to them, be mechazek them, mizmor shel yom hashabbos. He spoke to them, he gave them chizuk, and that chizuk that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them is what got them through the shibud of Mitzrayim. But the point is, there are two different reasons why we observe Shabbos. And this week, when we come to Shabbos HaGadol, if we look at the year beginning, the year begins with Tishrei. Let's make assume the year begins with Chodesh Tishrei. Rosh Hashanah. Until this point in time, why have we been observing Shabbos? We have been observing Shabbos because Hashem created the world. It's His world. 6 days the world was created. On the seventh day He rested, and that's why we create the world. This week is the beginning of the Geula. It was on Shabbos HaGadol that Moshe Rabbeinu told Klal Yisrael, take for yourself the Karban Pesach, who is Yud Nisan, tie the Karban Pesach to the Kari Hamita, prepare for the Geula. It's the Aschalto de Geula. And the Aschalta of the Geula took place on Shabbos. And when we ultimately observe Shabbos, we observe Shabbos because of the Geula. So Shabbos, this Shabbos, the reason for our observance of Shabbos has been magnified, Gesundheit, has been niskadel. Now we're not just observing Shabbos because of Hashem created the world. Starting with this Shabbos and the cycle of the year, we're observing Shabbos because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So Shabbos now has a whole new flavor, a whole new dimension. Now these two ideas of Shabbos, you know, they parallel one another. There is the physical world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but with Yitzias Mitzrayim, we have become the Am HaNivchar, and we have been granted the tools to infuse the mundane world with Kedusha. That idea of bringing Kedusha into the mundane world begins with Shabbos HaGadol. So the Shabbos now, on this week, the Shabbos now takes upon itself a new dimension that we did not have until now. And that's why we call it Shabbos HaGadol. Okay, now there's another reason why we call it Shabbos, another interesting reason which I saw caught my attention. It was a very great sakana for Klal Yisrael to take for themselves the sheep and tie it to their bedpost, because the sheep was the idol of the Egyptians. And there are various midrashim that tell us that the Egyptians were furious and they wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael. Miraculously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought upon them various diseases and problems, and they were busy with themselves. They were unable to bother Klal Yisrael. So the commentators there, so that the miracle wasn't just on Shabbos HaGadol, it was a miracle for the next 4 days. It was a miracle on Shabbos, and Shabbos was the 10th day of Nisan, so the miracle was on the day they took it to their bedpost. It was a miracle on Sunday, on Monday, on Tuesday, and on Wednesday when they slaughtered it. It was also a miracle that they're slaughtering. So why do we attribute the miracle to Shabbos? There was the same miracle went on for the first 4 days. The 4 days of Bikur. So what's special about Shabbos over the other remaining days? And the answer is obvious, is that even though it's true it was a miracle all the days that we survived, but the beginning is always the most difficult. Once the Egyptians, we got away with it on day one, we got away with the violation on day one, it was smooth sailing. Kol haschalos koshes. And that is why we focus on Shabbos, we call Shabbos HaGadol, to remind us the beginning is very difficult. Any time we have to take a major step in life to overcome an obstacle, it's difficult all the way through. It can go on a difficult situation, go on for years, for days, for months, whatever it is, and go on for a very long period of time. But kol hascholois koshes. It was a very great, very brave act on behalf of Klal Yisrael to take the idol of the Egyptians and tie it to their bed in front of the Egyptians, where they came to ask, "What are you doing?" And had to give the response, "We're going to slaughter your idol." This was a difficulty for the remainder of their stay in Egypt for the next 5 days. It was just. But the hardest moment in time was the Haschalah. And therefore, on this Shabbos, we recognize Kol Haschalos Koshes. And the ability to overcome the first step is what is required of us. And from there, it's smooth sailing. And that's another reason why we focus specifically on this day. Okay, another important idea. There's a minhag in Klal Yisrael on Shabbos, HaGadol, to recite the Haggadah. Some strongly object to this practice because it says Haggadah ba'avur yochol ne'erosh chodesh tam loymar ba'yomahu I ba'yomahu yochol ne'bo yom tam loymar ba'avur ze loyamarti el b'shosh yishmatzu morah munachem lefnech. The Mishnah very carefully says the only time you say the Haggadah is only when you have on the table the matzah and the morah. So what business do you have saying the Haggadah on Shabbos, Haggadol, Rosh Chodesh Nisan? That's not the time. There should be a community obligation for everyone to sit down and recite the Haggadah instead of Baruch Nafshi. So some very strongly object. However, it is Minhag Yisrael among many groups to indeed recite the Haggadah, to recite the Haggadah on Shabbos, Haggadol. I saw what? Right, until Chaper Nafsho Sech, not the entire thing. Now we say Pesach Matzah Mar, but we tell Chaper Nafsho Sech, because in Echad, I think that's a balance. You don't want to go say Pesach Zo, Matzah Zo, Mar Zo, because you don't have those things in front of you at that moment in time. Okay, now, I saw in the Seder something very interesting, that this year, first night of Pesach is Shabbos. And the reason why the minhag was established to recite the Haggadah was really set for a year like this year. What do we mean? There's normally a halacha, we don't have this anymore today, but you're not allowed to read a book, a sefer, in front of a candle. candlelight, shemayata. It's not nogea today. Today we have electricity and all the places, everything is different today. But in time of Chazal, it was a very, very big issue. How do you learn the night of Shabbos? You come home, you have a delicious suit of Shabbos, shalmayas, but you can't sit down and learn the daf. There's no daf yom. The only time you can learn is at least bechabura. You have to have at least two people together, learning together, so each one will remind their friend that they should not come to tilt the candle. If you're all alone, you are in a lot of trouble. But the Gemara says there is an exception. The exception of shogur b'fifth, ma'at. If the topic that you're studying is partially fluent, you know it to some degree, then you don't have to look so carefully into the sefer. There's no concern shemayate. Haggadah. Is the Haggadah shogor b'fifth? So l'chora, no, it's not. You only read the Haggadah once a year. So the minig was to read the Haggadah on Shabbos Haggadah, so it can be shogor b'fifth. Once you already read it once, you reviewed it, so already you know it already a little bit. So then when you come to the Haggadah, to the Seder, the night of the Seder, everyone's going to read from their own Haggadah. You're not reading from one. The only time it's permitted two means two reading together from the same sefer. But if each person needs to sing at the table, there are many people at the table, and each one is reading from their own Haggadah, and you're reading from candlelight, it would be problematic. In order that it should be shogor b'fiv, so therefore we read it in advance.
But the Gemara says that if two people are reading, that is no problem.
Only from the same book. Only they're reading together from the same sefer. But if each one is reading from a different book, everyone has their own Haggadah, it is a problem. So by the Haseder, most people have their own, even in ancient times, they own their own Haggadah. So therefore, it became the minhag every year to do it. Now, I'm not sure every year, but certainly in a year like this year, where we're going to read the Haggadah on the night of the Seder, the night of Shabbos, where this candlelight is, not of Yom Tov, you're allowed to. But this year, when it's the night of Shabbos, and you're not allowed to read by candlelight, okay, it's not nogea today because of electricity, but the minhag of this year more than other years is a kiyum of the tradition to read the Haggadah, so it should not be a chash of shemayate, it should be partially fluent b'fiv. Okay, another just a halach inyan question. This Mitzvah Shabbos, will we recite the Hi Noyam? So normally you don't, any time there is a Yom Tov when you don't work, in the middle of the week, we do not recite V'hi Noyam. V'hi Noyam is a bakasha that we should be successful in Parnasa. You only need the bracha if you work a whole week. You work 6 days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But if Yom Tov falls out in the middle of the week, you're not going to work. So the custom is we do not say V'hi Noyam. Svarim don't follow that ruling. Svarim say V'hi Noyam no matter what. Even if the Yom Tov is the next day, even the other it doesn't make a difference. They always say V'Noyam. But what about Ashkenazim? So L'chara, you would say that this week you should say V'Noyam, because Pesach is on Shabbos. However, others argue that since we bring the carbon Erev Pesach, and Erev Pesach on Friday after Chatzos is already a Chol HaMoed, after Chatzos has the same status as Chol HaMoed, it's already a Zman, it's part of the week, we're not going to work. If we're not going to work part of the week, therefore we should not recite V'Noyam. But the Mishnah Berurah says, sorry, buddy. No cigar. Good try. No what?
How do we
all? Like all good things, machlokes. Like all good shul politics, machlokes. I don't know if the kid talks about it. Kid is bekatza, he doesn't get into controversy. The Mishnah Berurah says that you do say. Even though he says, even though Erev Friday, Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, you bring the Karban Pesach, that is not significant enough. It's not significant enough. It's time. Anyway, Erev Shabbos, you scale back on Malacha. Erev Shabbos. So he says it's not a significant reason why you should not say V'yat V'hi Noyam, V'yat HaKadosh. So he paskins, you should say it. I did not get a chance to look at the Luach. And Luach, Ezra's Torah Luach, I wonder what it says there. They usually follow the Mishnah Berurah, but not all the time. However, there are Cholkim. There are, I don't have names for you, but there are other opinions that hold that even this Mitzvah Shabbos, you will not say V'hi Noyam. So Mitzvah Shabbos, if you're looking for a good fight, you got something to fight about Mitzvah Shabbos. Okay. What?
Ovens are very hot.
Das Torah? You have Das Torah. You tell us. What do you say? What's your gut feeling? What's your gut feeling? Tell us.
Say it.
Say it. Okay. Mishnah Berurah says to say it. Okay, let's go to another idea. Let's do a little bit of the parasha. Okay, the parasha begins, Tzav es Aaron v'yespan of lema zois ras oila. Why do we all of a sudden have, in the beginning of the parasha, the word Tzav? Rashi is disturbed. What's Tzav? Ain't Tzav ela loshain loshain zirus, encouragement. Encouragement. Miyad uladeras, what is the encouragement? Not just this generation, for all generations. All generations, the laws of Kabbalah have to be fulfilled. And the Darsham come along and say, what exactly does Rashi mean? Miyad uladeras. It means, even in a generation when we do not have Karbanos, we have to recite, we have to be nizor in reciting the parasha of Karbanos, as it says the end of the sixth parasha, Zois Torah, Soil, Lachatos, Lamilch, Lashlamim. Why does it say the word Torah, Torahs, call anyone that is Oisek in the Torah of a Karban Chatos? It's as if he was Mak of the Karban Chatos. So the pasuk means that don't think that if Chas Vesholom there will be a Churmes Amigdash, that you no longer are you required to focus on the laws of Karbanos. That's not so. You always have to study and learn and know the laws of Karbanos, and that will be equivalent to actually bring the Karbanos to fulfill what it says, Mishal Mofanim Sefaseinu. Okay, then Rashi goes on to say another interpretation. This is a very, very interesting idea. And the other interpretation is, Omar Rabbi Shimon b'yoyser tzarech hakosiv lezariz b'mokum sheyesh bo chisaron kis, in a place when there is a loss of money. So all basically, the Mepharshim say this halacha is true for all karbanos. Every karban costs a small fortune. Go online and see how much it costs a cow, a bull, a sheep, a lamb. It's expensive. Karbanos is it's a small fortune. You think it's expensive to buy matzah? Could you imagine if you're living during the time of the Beis Hamikdash, how much it costs a person, chas v'shalom, did an aver, he rather bring a karban chatas? It costs a small fortune to bring a sheep, and to bring a goat, and to go bring with the menachos and the sachim. I'm sure it'll cost plus the airfare. Okay, El Al is not gonna give a discount. The wine and the menachos, and I'm sure there's gonna be a service charge. No, coming to the Beis Hamikdash, and that's gonna let you get away. Service charge, a donation, the koilel. You know, you have to give tips. It doesn't pay to sin. I have no doubt about it that during the time of Beis Mishkaim, it wasn't just the tircha. I think when we learn Gemara, we don't think about the cost. The average person thinks about, I did an avera. What a tircha. I gotta get on a plane. I gotta get in the car. Even if you're living in an area, just show the traffic is unbearable. I gotta go to Yerushalayim. Where am I gonna park? Okay, think about the cost of parking. You think it's expensive to park?
Bringing the animal with you?
Well, probably you buy. Well, you probably buy.
LB3, yeah.
Can you imagine what it costs in Manhattan to go park? To go park in Manhattan? Can you imagine what it costs to park in Eretz Yisrael? What they'll charge you for parking, if they even have a place to park? So we think of the tircha, but it's not just tircha. It's very expensive. It's big money. These things. So it says over here, tzav, it's zirus chasaron yesh chasaron kis. So I saw a beautiful idea from Rabbi Friend. Rabbi Friend says all the karbanos are expensive. In fact, any karban, the whole parasha, there's an expense. Why did the Torah use the word tzav in this very, very, very intense form, specifically in reference to the karban oila? Not say to Mizari Zasan Chisaron Kis, oila, not in reference to the karban chatas, the shlamim, the other karbanos, what? Exactly. So what does he know when he eats in those? So he gives a marshal drum shoot him, but it sometimes just to review the basics sometimes is important. He says that professional fundraisers will tell you that it's not all that difficult to raise money for a building. If you want to go raise money for a building, you know, there's a mahalik. It can be done. Because when you raise money for a building, they're going to put a big name on the building. So-and-so, the center for Torah, for scholarship, for this, for that. You'll be a big name on the building. There's going to be kavod malachim. There's going to be a cornerstone laying ceremony. There's going to be a ribbon ceremony. There's going to be honor, kavod. You're going to get a lot out of it. You're going to get honor. So it's not so hard. But when it comes to raise money to pay the budget, to pay their salaries, to pay for toilet paper, and to pay for food, this is an extremely difficult thing to do. Raising money when the people who give the money get nothing out of it, and the money is spent before you can blink, even before you give the check, the money has already been spent. This is an extremely difficult thing to accomplish. And that's exactly what the oil is all about. All of the other korbanos, by and large, there is benefit. Someone is getting benefit. The kohanim, they're getting a good meal. You bring a korban chatas, kachet kadashim, the kohanim, they owe you a debt of gratitude. When they sit down and have that delicious meal, they're going to have to say, we want to give credit, we want to give thanks to so-and-so who was didn't avera, who didn't avera, so we can have a delicious meal. Keep on sinning. Let those sins roll off the assembly line. They owe you a debt of gratitude. You can't deny. I mean, what about the hides?
You get four times as much too.
What?
If you're Ghana.
Dollar behaved. Okay, and when you come into my house, you see the beautiful carpet I have, the leather carpet, the tablecloth, the leather. You know where I got this from? So and so was Machal Shabbos, and this one was Nichshol in Eishes Ish. That's why I have a beautiful leather tablecloth. That's really what it's all about, and that's what it says. So there's always going to be a debt of gratitude. But when it comes to carbon oil, there's no gratitude. No one can care less. It's kol la Hashem, Menela. That's why bedavka in this situation it says tzav. This is the verse from my friend. He says, "What's the Musa Haskel? The Musa Haskel is that when they call you off from the organization, they say, can you please help us with some fundraising and give us $100 to buy some toilet paper for the yeshiva?" Tzav. Remember this Rashi. Kol makom sheyesh chisaron kis nemer by tzav. You have to be mezariz yourself. You're not going to get anything out of it. There's a chisaron kis, but nevertheless, this is kol la Hashem. It's a carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a beautiful thing. It's l'shem shemayim, and don't underestimate the kedusha, the value in doing the mitzvah. That's l'shem shemayim with a chisaron kis.
There was an article in the Times this year that, I mean, it wasn't for Jewish organizations, but it was the churches in New York. St. Patrick's Cathedral doesn't let anybody in to use the bathroom, whereas Trinity Church does, because Trinity Church spends $100,000 a year on toilet paper. Mm-hmm. All the bus tours start over there because mm-hmm. everybody goes to the bathroom there. They fixed up the bathrooms, they use the toilet paper and everything. St. Patrick's Cathedral doesn't want to undergo that cost, and they do not allow anybody in to use.
Wow.
They had a whole thing about where you can and where you can't go.
You heard it here.
This is tomorrow's brush.
About 6 months ago.
All right. Now let me tell you another vart. And this is a bar al derech. My friend is a litvak. Ner Yisrael al derech pshat. Now let's go to the oilam. Let's go to the chassidish oilam. A whole different shot in this pasuk. Chassidish mahalach in the pasuk from the chiddush harim. Chiddush harim says, what is a kiss? What is a kiss? Kiss means pocket, right? Pocket the money, but you're taking expense. But kiss on a very simple level just means a container, a pocket, something which protection. So he says as follows. Here's the dvar from the chiddush harim. It's a beautiful idea. First of all, what is a carbon oil mechaper for? Carbon oil is mechaper for hirhuri aveira. You don't actually bring a carbon oil for any. You're never commanded to bring a carbon oil for a sin. But if a person does on his own for a nadava, he decides to bring a carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's nimeila mechaper on hirhuri aveira. If a person has evil thoughts,
Even amazed.
A person has thoughts to be nichshol in arayos, he sees something. It's mechaper on asay, correct? It's mechaper on asay. It's also a maamar chazal. It's mechaper on asay, a different maamar chazal. But it's also mechaper on hirhurei aveira, on evil thoughts. Whether it's a thought of arayos, he sees something he should not see, or let's say he has kavanah to steal. Any machshava ra needs kapara. You have no obligation to bring a carbon, but if you do bring a carbon at some point in time in your life, that carbon is mechaper on hirhurei ra, on a machshava. What is a kiss? A kiss means a pocket of something of protection. The eyes have a kiss. The eyes you can close. Person doesn't have to see everything he sees. If he sees something that's not proper, he can close his eyes. The nose, he can close. He can take his fingers and close. If there's an odor, a fragrance, a avodah zarah, he has an option of closing his nose. The mouth. No one asks you to speak lashon hara. Just keep your mouth shut. You can. The peh has a kiss. The ears. Chazal say you can put your pinky into the ear, or you can take the earlobe into the ear. It doesn't really. I don't know. To me, I still can hear when you do that. But there must be some truth in closing up your ears and not hearing the words of lashon hara. There must be a koyach. Has a kiss. All of the evarim with which a person potentially can sin has a kiss. The eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears has a kiss. The only thing that a person can sin with that does not have a kiss is the heart. You really can't, well, the same idea, the machshava, the heart and the mind. You really can't control your emotions. A person is a natural, a person has taivas, he has desires. It's natural. This a healthy person has a yetzahara. That's the way it is. And achen vei to a person doesn't have a yetzahara. That's the way it is. That's a healthy person. But what happens? As soon as the yetzahara kicks in, you see something, you're jealous. Got to control yourself. I have to be samech b'chelko. Person has a yetzahara for arayas. You have to control yourself. But there's nothing you can do. There's no kiss. The heart, the emotions, the machshav of the heart cannot be controlled. What is mechaper? What is mechaper for such a the averos of the heart and mind? The thing which is chesaron kiss, chasidus shavart, chesaron kiss. It's lacking. It's lacking the packet. It's lacking the packet. It's the carbon oil. Something which lacks a kiss requires zeros. A real chasidus. You want to define chasidus. This is the definition. This is what defines chasidus. What it requires zeros. When it comes to the eyes, you don't need zeros. You don't need an extra degree of diligence. Just don't get yourself into trouble. Don't go look in places you should not be looking at. You won't have a trouble. There's always a kiss. The kiss protects you as you go in the street. Your mouth. Just keep your mouth. Don't get into trouble. But when it comes to the heart, emotion, people can't control their emotions. It's much more difficult. It's lacking. It's a chesaron kiss. It's lacking protection. And when you're lacking a kiss by the carbon oila, the first parsha here in the pasuk, the carbon oila, that's mechaper on the heart, which lacking kiss, then the Torah begins by telling you zeros. You need encouragement. You have to be mezaris. You need diligence. You have to work very hard on that part of the body which is lacking a kiss, the machshava, which will ultimately come and to need kapara. Okay, now let's go a little bit further. This idea of the machshava, the oil is the carbon, because machapara on machshava. When we come later in the parish to the carbon chatas, the carbon chatas says zois. Torah sachatas, and likewise for the carbon asham, the pasuk tells you exactly where to slaughter the chatas. Zois Torah sachatas bimkoim asher tishachet ha'ila tishachet ha'chatas lifnei Hashem. Torah tells you that the location of the shechitas sachatas is in the north, and it doesn't say the word north. It identifies the north part of the azara by telling you slaughter in the same place where you slaughter the carbon oila, and the same thing is true with regard to the asham, a guilt offering, another type of sin. You slaughter the asham in the place where you slaughter the carbon oila bimkoim asher yishchatu es oila yishchatu es asham. The commentators are asked, why does the Torah have to identify the location by referring you to the carbon oila? There are many ideas, but I think the common denominator of all the ideas is the oila is mechaper for machshava, for a thought. A carbon chatas, a carbon asham, is mechaper for a deed. And in fact, if you did it b'mezi, there is no, you don't bring a carbon. Only time you bring a carbon chatas, carbon asham, is when you did it by accident. You did a maisa. But the pasuk here is telling you a very powerful idea. There's really no such thing as an accident. Anytime a person accidentally is mechal Shabbos, he does the malacha. It really all started at one point in time with a corruption of machshava. your mind is not where it should be. If a person really vowed, let's say a person Nachshomi did a melacha on Shabbos, he turned on the lights. Okay, turning on the lights is not necessarily a melacha he chayiv on carbon for, if he holds. But let's say he did a real melacha on Shabbos. You were kaitzer. You ripped something. You ripped out a blade of grass out of the ground. It's an accident. I didn't have kavana. I accidentally did it. If you really valued Shabbos, if you really appreciated the kiddush of Shabbos, it never would have happened. You would have come to accidentally pluck a blade of grass out of the ground. But I'm telling you, I had no intent to do so. You're right. That's why you bring the carbon chatas, because if you did have intent to do so, you would bring. But it all started with an attitude that Shabbos is not so important. And you slip down the slippery slope, one thing led to another, you were not careful, and it happened in Mela. That's what the Pasuk here is coming to remind us. You're coming to bring a carbon chatas. Where should you slaughter the carbon chatas? So you ask the average person who says kibonis every day, kotshe kodoshim shkitosim batzafain. You slaughter in the north. Of course, kotshe kodoshim in the north. Chatas kotshe kodoshim. Pasuk doesn't say that. Pasuk doesn't say, okay, bring your carbon chatas. Go to the north and slaughter it. No. Bimkoim asher tishchates ha'oila. That's where you shach the carbon chatas. I want to impress upon you, sir, it's because you're not, your machshava is not where it should be. And that's true for the chatas, the asham, all of the sins, sin offerings.
Because it shouldn't embarrass the person too much.
Yeah. That's another time. Another time is that the north time is, it's isolated. People should not see that you bring carbon chatas. Torah had rachmanis upon your embarrassment. Okay, this is an idea, panel idea. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, this is a general idea. I think this week's parasha, I want to give you a half-baked idea. I think this week's parasha, parasha stuff, all the parashas in the Torah, has the most, what?
18 minutes.
That's exactly what this topic is about. Yeah. That's really what I want to talk about, is time. All the parashas in the Torah, I want to suggest, I think it's true, there's no parasha that has more time-related mitzvos than parashas tzav. You go to the parasha from beginning to end, there's one characteristic of each mitzvah that jumps out, leaps out of the page, and that is the concept of time. Okay, for example, we have the carbon toida. We're running differently. Carbon toida. The carbon toida is kotshe kalim. The rules of kotshe kalim are: you're allowed to eat the kotshe kalim for how long? For two days and the night in between. A carbon shlamim, the classic carbon shlamim. The only exception is the toida. The toida is a kotshe kalim, but the toida can only be eaten for one day and the following night. And to make things even more difficult, you have to bring 40 loaves of bread, which is impossible for a person. It's impossible for one person to eat 40 loaves of bread. So obviously, what the Torah and the Mepharshim tell us, the goal is that you have to invite a lot of people. You got to make a big party and invite a lot of people, and they're going to ask you, "My high, why are you inviting me to this meal?" You tell them, "Because I got out of jail." Oh boy, this is a bitter joke, huh? A bitter joke. I traveled, I left the Midbar, I had to travel over the sea, the Midbar. I was a son, I was a choyla, I was nisrape, I was healed from my illness. So you express, you make basically a suda soida. The Torah basically is forcing you to make a suda soida, and the Torah demands this be done immediately. Don't procrastinate. Don't dilly-dally. Torah wants it to be done. I want you to be makir toif to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If they ango eda, I want it to be done immediately. It has to be done with an intensity one day, one night. Time. The Torah here is breaking the rules of the kotshe kalim, which normally is allowed two days, and says it must be done in one day. That we're breaking the rules of time. The Torah wants you to be a zoriz. Wants zrizim makdimim is demanding you to break the rules of time. Okay, let's give another example. Another concept in the carbon toda, which really relates to this parasha, is there are two different types of bread. What's the difference between chametz and matzah? There's only one difference: time. The only difference chametz and matzah is the absence of zman. There is no, you have to be diligent within 18 minutes, it has to be done. Chametz, you can take all the time you want, let the dough rise. This is the defining characteristic between chametz and matzah, zman. All the karbanos, the most unique among the karbanos is the carbon tar. The tar is the only carbon which has private carbon, has chametz. There are 30 loaves of matzah and there are 10 loaves of chametz. So isn't that a very bizarre type of carbon? When you're bringing a carbon which the time itself has been compressed from 2 days to 1 day, plus the makeup of the carbon is a contradiction in zman. There is matzah, there is an absence of time, and then there is chametz, which is a carbon which involves time. Okay, so I'm not coming to define exactly what's the deeper meaning, but I just want to point out time, everything is you're dealing with a carbon, and the overwhelming characteristic of this carbon is the concept of time. Okay, another example of zman, pigel. In this week's parasha, we learned about, let's talk about Noser. This week is the first week, if I'm not mistaken, I think we have it last week, but I think this week is the first week we have the concept of Noser. A regular carbon has time limits. You can't dilly-dally forever. It's kodshei kodashim. You got 1 day, 1 night. Evahanoisar mimenu bo'esh yisareif. It has to be burnt. Kodshei kalim, 2 days, and the night in between when it's over. Anything that's left of evahanoisar mimenu, there's no free law. It's not open-ended. Time is an issue. Then we come to probably the most bizarre halacha in the Torah that relates to time. This is really off the charts. It's pigel. What is that all about? It's a whole mesechta zvachim. Mamish, half the mesechta is about pigel. Half the mesechta zvachim is all about pigel. You bring a carbon, and while the kohen is doing one of the four avos, shchita, kabbalah, halacha, zrika, he has a machshava. It's machlekes rishonim. Does machshava mamish mean machshava, or does it mean that you express it bedibor? I'm going to eat from the meat after its time limit has passed. So what happens to the basar? It's a cheftza of pigel, which now means if a person eats this piece of meat, he's chayif karis. It's an extreme halacha. Karis. The person is chayif karis for eating a piece of meat, which a kohen had a machshava that he's going to do an avoda chutz lezman. I mean, what more do you... That's off the charts. The whole concept of zman is totally off the charts when you're dealing here with the concept of pigel. Another concept of then we're dealing with... this parasha deals with menachas. Menachas will have to be all matzah, okay, all the kabban, all menachas is matzah, the absence of time. Okay, there's no contrast, but matzah, all of the pasuk makes it very clear in this week's parasha that every time you bring a mincha in the Beis HaMikdash, it may only be from matzah. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was pretty much kosher Pesach all year round, except for the Karban Torah, and except for Shavuos. Shavuos, they brought the Shtei Halechem. Shtelachem is chametz, and the carbon toida is 10 breads of chametz. But b'derech klal, all of the menachos, which was 99% of the karbanos of the menachos, were matzah, and matzah is the absence of time. Okay, another example. At the end of the parasha, we have the prisha. This is a very fascinating concept. The miluim, during the 7 days of miluim, the kohanim were sequestered. They were not allowed to leave for 7 days. The children of Aaron were required to remain locked up in the Beis HaMikdash in preparation for the 8th day. From that we learn that the Kohen Gadol, when he goes in 7 days, the first Mishnah in Masechta Yoma, for 7 days, he has to be sequestered. There's a tkufa that you need 7 days of preparation. It's also a concept, an idea of time, a time-related mitzvah. You have to be sequestered for 7 days to prepare yourself for the event of the event of Yom HaKippur, when the Kohen Gadol goes lefnai v'lefnim. All of the drashas in the beginning of Masechta Yoma are all derived from the end of this week's parsha, when the Bnei Aaron were required to be sequestered for 7 days inside the Mishkan before leading up to the Chanukas HaMishkan. So we have over here many halachas that relate to time. Usually, what? Okay, but I'm showing you that almost every single mitzvah here relates to time. Every single mitzvah. Now let's also go back to the first pasuk, tzav. Every time it says tzav, what does Rashi say? When it says tzav, every tzav is Ein tzav el loshon zirus liyad uledoyros. What more could you possibly want from that? That zirus, the word tzav itself, says every single thing that it says here is not limited only to this generation. It's for every single generation to come. Wherever you turn in this week's parasha, you encounter the concept of time. Usually, parasha tzav is Shabbos HaGadol. On a Shana Pshuta, on a year when it's not a leap year, Tzav is always the introduction to Pesach. What exactly is, so you really touched upon, what is Pesach? The climax of Pesach is Chatzos Laila. Everything in Pesach leads up to Chatzos Laila Nakas B'choros. That was the moment of Geula. The moment of Geula was when Paros said, leave. Nakas B'choros, Hashem Yikol Kol Neis B'Eretz Mitzrayim. That is the moment of Makas B'choros. Exactly when was the moment of Makas B'choros? So Moshe Rabbeinu, he warned Paro, Kichatzos HaLaila. Makas B'choros will take place approximately at Chatzos. Rashi says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu say approximately? Why did Moshe say it exactly? So the answer given was because it's Tagnine Paro, the astrologers, astronomers, they would make a mistake. They're not experts. And they would dispute Moshe Rabbeinu when exactly is called the midpoint. So Moshe did not want to engage them in this debate, when is the exact moment of midnight. So he just said approximately. That's the simplest answer to the question why Moshe Rabbeinu took Kechatzos. However, the Mepharshim said something a lot deeper. And you know, that's a very difficult answer because we know that with the Malach, when Yitzchak Avinu was born during daylight hours, the Malach came and he etched a scratch into the wall, a sundial. So you'll say that a sundial only works during the day. Midnight, when it's pitch black dark, there's no such thing as a sada. That's not muchach, because when you're dealing with moonlight, you're dealing with shadows. You have to study if there's such a thing as a moon dial, where you can produce an exact moment in time using, it's the 15th day, there's the exact, they're using sand, using the movement of it's the 15th day of the month, you have to remember. And the earth is spinning. So you have to study ancient history if there's a way to predict very specific moments in time during the night. We know for a fact that an ancient civilization is a way to predict very specific moments during the day using the sun and shade. What about the night? Could very well be there are techniques as well. And so there was no need for Moshe Rabbeinu to say Kichatzos, just like the Malach told Avram Avinu and Sarah that you're going to have a child born to you exactly on this moment in the day. With the sundial, there's a possibility that a technique could have been employed for the midnight as well. But Moshe said Kichatzos. He didn't want to get involved with them. But there's another reason given, we once mentioned this, and it really captures the entire essence of what Pesach is about, and perhaps it alludes to why everything in this week's parasha is Takdama to the parasha Shabbos HaGadol. And that is, something that is spiritual really has no time. It cannot be defined in terms of time. For example, when does a person die and when is he born? When is the moment of Yitzias? People are always asking, what time? What is the moment of death? Time of death. The truth is, it cannot be defined in terms of time. The best you can possibly say is, at this second, let's say at 1:04 and 3 seconds, he was alive. What did I say? At 1:03 and 1:03 and 3 seconds, he was alive. And at 1:03 and 4 seconds, he wasn't here anymore. When did he die? You break up time into the smallest micro measurements that a human being can define, whatever they are. Break up time into the smallest. You cannot pinpoint the moment of Yitzias Neshama. The best you can say is, in this small particle of time, the person was alive, and the next moment of time, the person has died. So define for me the moment of death. I can't. Because no matter how small, no matter how if you put time under a microscope and you go smaller, 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 you can never pinpoint the moment of death, the moment of birth. The best you can say is, at this particle of time you were alive, and the next particle of time he was no longer alive. So when did he die? In between. But in between is something which cannot be defined in human terms of time. It's exactly the point. Because life and death is spiritual. And spirituality cannot be defined in terms of time. Spiritual matters cannot be defined in time. It's beyond l'mayla min hazman.
But you can't define anything.
You can define something. You can define a moment. You can define the day begins at this moment, at this moment. You can define, you can break up time into its smallest units, and you tell me this is the moment that event occurs.
Well, we had a difference. You told us once that you can only finish work in those moments. Shabbos begins
by okay, that's another issue. There's a problem called Bein Hashmashas. That's a separate, when the day begins, the end. That's a separate thing called Bein Hashmashas. That is something that can be defined. We just do not know when it is exactly. That's called Bein Hashmashas. But let's discuss, let's say an event. An event is going to happen during at 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, something is going to happen. You can break up time into its smallest parts and say at this specific moment is when the event is going. The event happens. Okay. Something, you can.
Say it's going to be a race. You're going to be able to say the start is...
Yes. Yeah, a very good example. You have a race, a foot race, a marathon, and it's amazing. I don't know how they do it. They go and they tell you who the winner is, and they break down how long it took him to run in these crazy amounts of time. How in the world do they do it? Can't be precise. But let's say whatever it is. But the greater the technology, the more you can pinpoint the exact second. And if there's such a thing in this world that's breaking up time into its smallest possible unit, you can define when the runner crossed the finish line. That's from our perspective. Efshul Litzam, same. Can we be mitzamsim? But in science, there is tzimtzum. I think what Chazal say, can we as human beings, can we be oimed on that moment? But there is a moment. There is a moment that's there. It's just that a human being can't break it down to such a moment. I think you go look at a recording, so you know approximately when the recording ends. But if you go and you put it in an electronic format and you zoom in, you can see much with greater precision. But that's only through scientific tools. Now when you look at it from the outside. But when it comes to spirituality and the example of being born and dying, the moment the neshama enters the world, the moment the neshama leaves the world, that even with the greatest instruments cannot define, because it's not something that's physical. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said kichatzos. Before chatzos, your firstborns will be alive, and after chatzos, they'll be dead. When exactly will they die? Cannot be defined. It's kichatzos. It cannot possibly be defined. And that is the moment. At that very moment is the moment when Klal Yisrael will become the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At that very moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take the firstborns of Klal Yisrael as a nation to him as a nation. It's spiritual. Time is spiritual. It's the absence of time. That's why is in the whole Yom Tov HaPesach defined in terms of matzah. Matzah is the absence of time. It is a piece of bread that has no zman. Why is this the symbol? All even the politicians are holding matzahs, are going to the matzah baking factories. It's the symbol of Pesach, because matzah is the absence of time. Yitzias Mitzrayim took place kichatzos halayla, the moment of chatzos, kichatzos. It's a moment when there is no time. Because what do you mean there is no time? Because it's spiritual. Spirituality is not limited to time. Time is the davar gashmi. It is the most mundane thing possible. Hoya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's hoya, hoy ve'viyah. It's all the same, the past, the present, and the future. We have no understanding of what that means, because we are physical creatures, and we live in time, linear time. Time goes, it goes on forward. We can't go, there's a timeline. And that's why this parasha, all the parashas, from all the parashas of the Torah, there's no parasha that is more in your face, contrasting elements of time like Parashas Tzav. Parashat Tzav, whether it's Pil, whether it's the Shiva Simim Aluim, which Prisha, you have to quarantine yourself for 7 days, whether it's Tzav, Ekol Mokum Shnemer Tzav, Loyu L'doyrois, it's eternal, it's Nitzri, whether it's going to be Noisar, it's going to be the Karban Toida, all the elements of time are found in this week's Parsha, because this is the Hakdama, this is the Hachana to Pesach, which is a Yom Tif, which is L'mayelam in Hazman. L'mayelam is man for a nation, that's L'mayelam in Hazman. A nation that's Nitzchi, the Netzach Yisrael lo Yishaker.
Saying that time was created only for, God created the elements of time for human beings to live by. For God has no need for time. He is.
Right. A Kadosh Baruch Hu is L'mayelam Nazman. So anytime we focus on something which is lacking Zman, we're coming, we're connecting to our Kadosh Baruch Hu.
I don't understand that Matz has nothing to do with time, because if it's 18 minutes and 5 seconds, it's not Matz.
Exactly. So you have to prevent, remove time.
It seems to me it's very time oriented, because if you have to finish the baking within a certain period of time.
You don't allow time to enter.
Time makes
chametz.
What makes chametz? How do you make chametz?
Time
makes chametz. You have to let something sit for 18 minutes for it to become chametz. You need to use time to produce chametz. You need time. Even if you're using yeast, how did the yeast come into existence? Also came through time.
If you just take the wheat,
yeah,
it doesn't cook at all. It's not matzah either, is it?
No, you're producing a product. You're producing a creative something. You're producing something and emphasizing the absence of time. Normally you have bread involves time. You let the bread sit, time. Time is an ingredient in the production of bread. Here I have a product that lacks time. That's spiritual. The absence of time connects to hoya, hoya, the year. It's spiritual, it's kichatzois. It is the major theme of Parshas Tzav. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. Okay, I saw this question.
It's not an absence of time.
It's an absence of time.
It's less time.
No, less time is an absence of time. Contrast chometz with matzah. What is chometz? Chometz is not. What is matzah? Matzah is not chometz.
Right.
What is chometz? Chometz is man. What is chametz? Chametz is a product which includes. No, chametz is a product which includes the ingredient of time. Chametz is a product which includes the ingredient. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. I saw a question asked. So the question is by a couple of mafarshim. We have here the beginning of the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen is a very fascinating. Well, let me just go. So different. Okay, Trumas Hadeshen. Not Trumas Hadeshen. Let's first focus on the carbon oila. Parsha begins Zoy Tzaves. I mean, it's not only Zoy Tzaves. Oila Hiho Oila Al Moita Al Mizuch Laila Al Abayka V'Eish HaMizbeach Tukadbo. The pasuk over here says that the fire of the mizbeach is Tukadbo. The fire of the mizbeach is burning bo. The fire is continuously burning on the mizbeach. The Farshim asks, how could it possibly be that the mizbeach was not burnt? The mizbeach was made from atzei shittim, and there was a thin little plate of copper on the outside. The copper conducts heat. Adrab, the mizbeach should have been burnt to a crisp, especially when it says that the ash has to continuously burn on the mizbeach. So the answer is very obvious. The answer is very Mr. Haskell, especially in light of the horrible tragedy that happened last week, is that fire only burns what it's told to burn. The fire was here to burn the korbanos. This was the Eish Min HaShemayim. The Eish Min HaShemayim, it's here on a shlichus. The shlichus is to take the korbanos. The shlichus is not to burn the mizbech. In this very same place, the Torah tells us the concept. Eish tamid tukar al hamizbech lo sichteh. The fire is burning. Yet in that same fire, it did not consume the wood, the atzei shittim, the ideal fuel for fire was not consumed. In order to always remind us that every time there is chorbin, esh is chorbin, it's the Yad Hashem. You should not forget that of course there's teva, and there are reasons why things happen, al derech ha-teva, but you always have to know that behind the teva there is the Yad Hashem behind it. The Eish Tamid took Osech lo sichte, but yet the wood, which is the ultimate fuel, that remains continuing, that remain in perfect condition. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. We have Chumas Hadesh. What's the purpose of the Chumas Hadesh? Every single morning you take off some ash from the Mizbeach and the Samay Eitzel HaMizbeach. So I saw a very interesting idea. Chuma, when you separate Chuma, what happens when you separate Chuma on a regular basis? You have grain, the grain is Tevel, and is it holy? No, it's not holy. If you have a silo full of grain, the grain is not holy, and you select a certain an amount, when you separate that as truma, it's sacred. You've taken something that's mundane, and by separating it, it becomes sacred. When you give ma'isa to the Levi, when the Levi separates Trumas ma'isa, the Truma is sacred. The Truma is always sacred, and the leftovers are always mundane to some degree. So here the question is, when you ask the average person, you have Trumas Hadesh every morning, the Kohen goes to the Mizbeach, and he takes out the garbage, and he takes a shovel full of the ash. When he's separating, being that the Torah calls it Truma, or Chazal really call it, called Trumas Hadesh, by selecting a small amount, a shovel full of ash, what you're really doing is you're sanctifying that ash. The ash on the Mizbeach, it's nasa mitzvasa. The ash l'chor has no kedusha. After the carbon is burnt to a crisp, the carbon is kodesh. There's a din ni'ilo on the carbon. It's sacred. After carbon has been consumed, nasa mitzvasa. The ash no longer has any sanctity. When the Kohen goes and he separates a small amount, he's now sanctifying that ash. What? Possibly. Yes, possibly. And what does he do with that ash? What do you normally do? Normally, now this is different than every other carbon in the world. Everything you do in the world, you can live in the North Pole, the South Pole, you can live in Mars, and you want to make a carbon, you gotta take something, and you gotta go all the way to Eretz Yisrael, to the Yerushalayim, to the Beit HaMikdash, and bring it to the, I mean, the holiest thing is to bring it, to put it on the Mizbeach. That makes it holy. I take a mundane object far away, an animal on the North Pole, I bring it to the Beit HaMikdash, I'm gonna sanctify by putting it on the Mizbeach. Here it's just the opposite. You're taking ash on the Mizbeach that is mundane, you're sanctifying it, and you're taking it off the Mizbeach, and you're putting it on the ground. Chazal tells us miraculously that small amount would sink into the ground. And first, what happened when it sunk into the ground? It sanctified the world. The Trumas Hadesh is so holy, it is the opposite of a carbon. A carbon, you're taking something that is mundane and you're bringing it to a central location of holiness to sanctify it. Here you're taking something from the Mizbeach, which is mundane, and you're sanctifying it on the Mizbeach, and you're bringing it out to the world. You're first taking a small amount and putting it on the floor on the Mizbeach, and then you're taking a whole shovel, you're taking off everything on top of the Mizbeach, el michutz lamachneh, el makoim tahar, to mitar the world. In other words, Torah is teaching us there are really two parts to a carbon. There is, we don't appreciate the second part. The first part we appreciate, we come carves to come close. You take yourself from a distance and you come close to you as a magnet to a place. But there's the aftermath. After the carbon is over, it ain't over. Then the job is, the avoda is to take the carbon and sanctify the world. Take the product of the carbon and use it as a tool to be mekadesh the world. And Hamei v'Nyavin, you see, Rachmanu Litzlan, there are korbanos, animal korbanos, Rachmanu Litzlan, there are other type of korbanos. I mean, besides the tragedy that happened here last week, we all know the tragedy of Har Nof, what happened in Har Nof. And it was just a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. They had this week, Hachnos HaSefer Torah, in honor of the Kedoshim in Har Nof. And the aftermath of a korban, no one wants to bring korbanos. Chas, don't get me wrong, korbanos is not, no one's looking for korbanos. But Rachmanu Litzlan, Karbanos have a two-part. There's the Hakravas HaKarbanos, and then there is the aftermath. And the aftermath is essential. It is where you learn from what has happened and use it as a springboard to sanctify the world, to sanctify ourselves and the world at large.
So you're saying the reason that Kohen can't be Metamah in the base of Chorus is because the Kedusha is a completely higher level than he
okay.
is. Kedusha
does not allow it to go. Okay, with that we will conclude. Have a wonderful Shabbos.